Okay, fine. So yesterday we set up the issue. We noted that in the Psukim there is a bit of... you could go either way on whether the mitzvah of Shemitah is directed on the person, right, that he can't work, on the process of work, or on the result, right, that the person is responsible to bring about a certain result, i.e., that the land should rest, right? That's what we saw. That was the central question that was driving us yesterday. We noted that, right, we dealt with two nafkemina yesterday. What were the two implications of this that we dealt with yesterday? Non-Jew and a Jew, right? So let's spell it out. If it's a Jew, so obviously it's prohibited for you to give over land in Israel to be worked during Shemitah to a Jew. However, the question is, why is it prohibited? There are two directions that we could take. One is the one Mordechai was usually the advocate for yesterday, which was the Lifnei Iver one, right? Which is that the problem is not because the land will be worked, but because I can't be responsible for facilitating the sin of another. But the sin is the act of working the land, and therefore the problem is Lifnei Iver. On the other hand, right, it's possible that, no. Exactly. The problem is because I'm responsible for my land that it should rest. Now, if you have a non-Jew working, so you isolate it because you remove Lifnei Iver from the discussion, not because there's no Lifnei Iver to non-Jews. There is Lifnei Iver to non-Jews, right? Who remembers the classic case of Lifnei Iver from Avodah Zarah Daf Vav?
Said yesterday
Thank you, Kobe. Oh, see? You throw it. One of my teachers once said, right, the only thing people remember from Shir are tangents. So hide important things in tangents, right, and unimportant things in Shir, and then everyone will remember what you want them to remember. So there is something to that. But yes, the classic case is Iver Melechai, and therefore we know that Lifnei Iver does apply to facilitating the sin of non-Jews, but what it does not apply to is, Ellie, right, what does it not apply to? Lifnei Iver applies to what? Meaning, Lifnei Iver applies to Gentiles. What doesn't apply to Lifnei Iver with Gentiles? Right? Facilitating sins that they're not obligated in, like Shemitah, right? However, if the problem is the land resting, yes, Zach? It applies to a Jew facilitating the sin of a non-Jew. Whether it applies to a non-Jew facilitating the sin, that is less clear. You'll tell me, but it's not one of the Shemans may know. Why could it not be clear? What? Why would the Acharonim want to do it? I don't know. They don't believe that there's a problem in getting non-Jews to sin? I don't know. They don't like it. So how do they do it? It's an interesting question. But you'd have to have been here and share when we did Avodah Zarah 3 years ago. Or I'll give you my card afterwards, but not now, because it'll take time. It's a fascinating discussion, but yeah. Yeah.
How can you, I don't understand how, like, say, giving a bonafide to a non-Jew would be like, let's say, Iver. I mean, like, because obviously, if you gave him any intentionally, and you knew that it was a bonafide, then
so there's clearly a case where he's going to eat it.
That wouldn't be Lifnei Iver. If you told him that he was going to fine, at that point it's his choice.
Right. No, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. Right? If you know he's going to do the sin, then no, that's not how it works.
Oh, if you know, but let's say you...
If you don't know, it's a different story. Or if he could do it without you, then it's potentially a different story. Yeah, that's the question of how you understand.
Like you're deceiving someone to do it.
Well, my question was if you're deceiving
someone. So, it's very nice. Kobe is a Tana, and he agrees with the Sifra's interpretation. He just didn't realize that the Gemara didn't agree with that interpretation. It's true. In the Sifra, he's right. In the Sifra, Lifnei Iver, even though it's expanded to Averot, beyond the shot of, you know, tripping a blind person, he talks about a case of deception. In the Bavli, that's not true. In the Bavli, it's clear that even if there's no deception, you can violate Lifnei Iver. Kobe says, how could that be? How could we pass in that way? Which is what the Bavli does. And the Rambam comes and is one of his cases where he actually provides the psychological reason. He says, because the Bavli clearly assumes that in addition to being blind through deception, you can be blinded by desire, right? And therefore, even the person is technically aware of what's going on, right? You're dealing with a situation where people aren't necessarily at that moment fully free to stop it, right? They're not thinking clearly, and therefore by you facilitating it, you are in some way tripping a blind person, right? That's the Rambam.
Are we allowed to like making a?
No. That's also usher, right? Also with Neiver. Like Neiver has four potential circles of interpretation, right? Right, very quickly, again, this is a very long share, but with Neiver has four potential circles of interpretation. The literal interpretation, which is don't trip a blind person, which is a machloket achronim, weirdly enough, of whether you actually violate Lifnei Iver if you trip a blind person. It's a machloket mental chinuch in the Mishnah Melech, as to whether or not the pshat matters. One of those machlokot that drives me a little bit crazy. The second circle is that maybe not only tripping a blind person, but causing damage to someone, where there Unklus seems to say you violate Lifnei Iver, the Ad Ramah, in the second paragraph of Bava Basra, some Kov Zayin seems to take it that way, the Sefer Hasidim seems to take it that way. Sefer Hasidim has actually been invoked in the context of knowingly going somewhere where you have COVID and getting people sick. It was one of the pieces that was invoked that you might violate Lifnei Iver, literally, right, because you're like, anyways. The third circle is the Sifra, which is what Kobe wants, which is deceiving people into performing Averot, right, where you have moved towards the spiritualized understanding of an Iver, but left Iver as meaning blind. And then the Gemara is fourth expansion, which is even if someone knows that it's Usur, it's still Usur to facilitate the sin.
It contains all of those.
It definitely includes the last two, right? And within that, they also assume that it includes a prohibition to give bad advice. Right, it's not just a spiritual; it's also pragmatic. Right, giving bad advice might also be lifnei iver. Okay.
Oh, no. Well, that quickly went to the changes. So my question was, according to Kobe's interpretation, which is kind of how I
the sifras, yeah.
Also, then how could you say that giving a iver minachai to a non-Jew is causing him to?
And again, the answer is because the Gemara expands beyond the Sifra, that even when someone's aware that he's sinning, it's still prohibited, as the Rambam explains, because people could be blinded by desire. Right? That's literally what he's
saying.
Not necessarily, but if he asks you for it, you give it to him. Right? I mean, you're not allowed to make a cheeseburger. You're not allowed to cook milk and meat.
Okay.
Remember?
If you make a McDonald's run for a cheeseburger,
you can't get enough from it. Stop with milk and meat. Milk and meat is problematic.
Okay.
You can't cook it. You can't benefit from it. Bad. Or someone asked me the Shiloh this week. He's like, can I cook for a non-Jew in a non-kosher oven? I said, well, depends. If it's milk and meat, obviously not. If there's milk and meat in the dirty oven, possibly not, because then you're cooking unwittingly that which is the oven, which you're not allowed to do. Cooking non-kosher food for a non-Jew, for right, not for business, is... otherwise, mutter, because you're allowed to get hana, you're allowed to cook. If not, things with trust or by not. If that shayla ever comes up to you.
All right. Fine.
But someone asked me, someone from last year. Okay. Good. Fine, shayla.
It's harder to think of something outside of cooking for a not. All right.
Okay.
I'll think of it again.
Fine. So we noted yesterday that on the one hand, Rashi sounds like it might be on the land, Tosvot, who says that the Isser is on the person who works, sounds like it's on the person who works, seems to think it's on the action, Tosvot Rabbi Elchanan, who says that you violate, seems to say it's on you, the Rvah seems to say it's both, Svei Dinim, right? And the Minchas Sinuch divides it differently. How does Minchas Sinuch divide it? Aseh versus Lo Taseh, because he says the Aseh sounds like it's on the land, right? Shabbat Shana, right? Lishavta Haaretz, Shabbat on Yel Haaretz. The land should rest. But the Isurim, right, the prohibitions are on the person, like Tadcha, Lo Tizra. Okay? And therefore, the Minchas Chinuch we saw yesterday in Kuf Yud Bet said that he thinks, he paskins which way? He paskins that there is a prohibition, or a bitul aseh at least, on the land, on working the land, having the land work more precisely. And in Kuf Yud Bet, what's the nafkamina for that? Non-Jew. Right, that was the one that I gave you. But good, Eli and Mordechai, since you wanted more makarot, so I gave you the two other places in the Minchas Chinuch where he deals with it, so?
We didn't finish that yet, but...
Okay, so did you do... Did you get through any of it?
It was mostly a review of him and from yesterday, but we also did half of
the... Okay, good. So let's see what else. Minchas Chinuch, once we're already doing it, the Minchas Chinuch has two other places where he discusses it. So one place he comes up with a wild chiddush, or the Acharonim hate with a deep passion, because it's obviously incorrect. Even if the Minchas Chinuch is generally right on this is obviously incorrect, and that is women. What about women? Do women violate if they work the field during Shemitah? So let's try to get into the Minchas Chinuch's head. Why would women be different? Oh, very good. Because the Aseh is a mitzvah Aseh Shezman Grama. It's a time-bound positive commandment. When should you make sure the land rests? In the seventh year. Oh, that's a time. Seventh year, that's a time. Ah, women are derived from mitzvah Aseh Shezman Grama. Right? What? Right, so this is very problematic. So he says, well, wait a second. What are they definitely obligated in? The Lodah says, how do you know? There's a Gemara that says it. Oh, very good. Which Gemara? It's actually a Mishnah, but sure. It's a Mishnah that I learned. It's a Gemara that I learned somewhere. It's a Mishnah, but you learned the Mishnah through the Gemara at some point in your life. Very good. Okay. Well, if it's the Gemara, where is it? What Masech does it in? What Seder is it in? No. I mean, not the primary Sukkah anyway. It is mentioned in Moed, but it's not the primary Sukkah. And I'm going to guess that's not where Zach learned. I'm going to guess you learned it in the primary Sukkah. Where is it? What? Zraim, it comes up in Zraim, it comes up in Brachot, it comes up in Moed, but it's the primary Sukkah. Primary. Yes, Nashim, very good. Where? Good guessing. You have 1 in 6 chance that we've knocked down 2. Very good, yeah. And you're like, and I know I didn't learn Kachim Batara, so okay. We're done that to do, yeah?
Whatever.
Kiddushin, Daf Chafet. No. No.
I learned Kiddushin, I didn't get that far.
That is where we started in Bikiyas in 9th grade in Rambam. Kiddushin Kav Chavtet.
I don't feel bad because I didn't.
It's a very classic place to start.
I had a different choice.
Yes, because it's about Kol Mitzvah Av HaLaben, Kol Mitzvah Ben HaLaAv, right? The obligations of parents to children, of children to parents, and then it says the Kol Mitzvah Aseh Shazman Grama Nashim Kirot, right? All positive commandments that are time bound, women are exempt, but all Lotases, all prohibitions, women are obligated in with only 3 exceptions. What are the 3 exceptions? What are the 3 prohibitions that women are exempt from? They're exempt from Mitzvah Seishes Man Grama, but what are the prohibitions that they're exempt from? Moshe! Let's make him feel guilty. What? What are the 3 lavim that women are pshirot from?
3 lavim?
That women are exempt from. Oh, come on, it's a Mishnah, people.
I don't feel so bad.
Don't shave your beard. Don't cut the peyot of your head. Right?
They don't have
beard. That's the point. That's what the Mishnah says. And the third one, what's the third? Bal titamei lameitim. The prohibition of Kohanim to become impure only applies to male Kohanim. We're working a bit of McDash and not women. You know, I just want to point out that one of my favorite shiurim in my entire time in Migdal to give was when we were doing Menachot, and I had the privilege of teaching the Agadata of how if you forget the Torah you've learned, you're chayav misa. It's just one of those pieces that, because I didn't even have to say it, I could just spend weeks reading the Gemara and the Mefarshim. It was cathartic. It was just cathartic for me.
Can I make that literally?
Yes, they made it literally. There you go.
You never know. A rabbi might just look at me and...
Maybe I'm being literal.
No,
maybe I be, maybe I will stare at you and you will turn into a pile of bones, which is...
A laser eye.
Yes, that's... Is it any surprise that a bunch of yeshiva guys, when they were inventing a superhero, gave him laser eyes? Honestly, they'd read some Gemaras and they're like, hey. Superman was made by a bunch of, like, old yeshiva guys.
Yeah. I actually heard from a friend of mine that his grandfather came up with the concept, and then the other two guys popularized it. I don't know.
Yeah, could be. But yeah, it's a very from thing. It's like, aha, what superpower should he have? It's like, well, stare at people and turn them into bones, right? That's what superheroes do. When they forget their Torah or they say something heretical. Yeah.
I think it originally was just that he could see three things, but then they just made it like everything, because Superman can do anything. So
yeah. We know, he's a god.
Just add more power.
Yes, I know. That's why they gave him a Hebrew name, which means demigod. Yeah, we got that.
Yeah.
Kal El. El, like God. Kal, like demigod.
Oh,
does Jor-El also mean something?
I don't know. Kal El clearly means like demigod or something.
Yeah.
Right? It's God-like.
So can you say his name? Right?
Yes, you could say his name. Right? El just means a force, right? A power. It means, right, equally Kodesh and Kal. Right? If you think Superman is God, then you shouldn't be saying it.
I mean,
if you think that, but you shouldn't.
I mean,
you shouldn't think that.
You can
that
say,
you shouldn't think.
You can say, I think, hello him when you're referring to Abba Zara's.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Fine. Good. No. So what does he say? So Minhag Tzedek said. He says, so maybe, what would you say, that women are not obligated, at least in the assay, right?
So they could sell their field to someone else.
Ah, very good. What would the nafka mina be? The nafka mina would be that women can't work their fields, but they could have a non-Jew work their
fields.
Maybe they do, right? Maybe they do. They don't inherit it, right? Right, and then there are other malachos that he says that might be true either, which I don't want to get into as well. One second. So he entertains the possibility that, right, now this is part of a complicated thing which I'm not going to get into yet, we'll get to it later in the year, that he thinks that for Harisha, you only violate the Aseh and not the Lot Aseh, whatever, right? And if that's the case, he said, so maybe women won't violate for Harisha, even if they plow. Now, this might not be true, right? Because we have other cases in Halacha where you compare the Aseh to the Lot Aseh, that anyone who's chayav in the Aseh is chayav in the Lot Aseh, is chayav in the Aseh, like Shabbat, right? Where women are chayav out in Kiddush, even though Kiddush is a mitzvah that says Moshe's man grama, we compare Zachor to Shamor. And just like women are chayav in Shamor, in the Lot Aseh, so they also chayav in Zachor, right? That's also a Gemara. In what Masechta again? Kiddushin, thank you, it's there. It's not a Chafet, it's a Lama Dalet, but okay. Fine, it's later on the Sugya. Lama Dalet, Lama Dalet.
Wait, what?
How
big of a Sugya is that?
Long, one of the longest in Shas. The first parak of Kiddushin is the longest in Shas. It's 40 blot.
That long?
Yes. That long is longer than like 15 Masechtos. Yes. By significant margin. Yes. Wonderful. Wonderful. Right. Now, in the end of the day, right. Now, in the end of the day,
you said Harisha, it's better for them to make a non-Jew do it?
So he thinks that maybe it would be much easier for them to do Harish themselves, but that's based on his weird position, right? Right, but then he wonders, right, that maybe for women, right, he wonders at least that maybe for women they would be allowed to have a guy do it because they're only Chayavad, right? Again, this depends. Right, and again, as he points out himself, and the Acharonim build on him, and they say, wait, even if you buy them in Chas Chinuch, right, presumably Shemitah is like Shabbat in that way that once the Aseh and the Lot Aseh exist, so anyone who's chayav in the Lot Aseh is chayav in the Aseh, but if you didn't want to do that, you wanted to split it, so theoretically, that could be a nafka mina. There might also be implications for Tosefet Shviat. Okay, but that's another potential. Nafka mina min chinuch has yet another discussion that we'll talk about in just a second. Okay? Fine. Let's look at the Rambam. Okay, let's make sure we get the Rambam down, and then if we get some more nafkaminas in, great. So let's look at the Rambam. So Josh and Kobe were the ones yesterday who kept telling me the Rambam makes no sense, the Rambam makes no sense, the Rambam makes no sense, the Rambam makes no sense. So good, the Rambam makes no sense. Good, Kobe, tell me why the Rambam doesn't make sense. So the Rambam is divided up. Before every set of halachot, well, let's remind ourselves. Again, I can take nothing for granted. Rambam, what's his name? Moshe Ben Maimon, when does he live? What century? He's born circa 1140. He dies circa 1204, 1205. Okay? Starts in, we talked about this. He starts in Spain. He's chased out by the Almohads. Ends up in Egypt. Okay? That's where he lives most of his life. Fine. The Rambam, right, his major halakhic work is, what does he call it? What do we call it? What? He called it the Mishneh Torah. Many of his contemporaries thought that that was an arrogant thing to do because, you know.
Yeah,
because, you know.
He was kind of invalidating like everything.
Well, yeah, what he said was that once I write the Mishneh Torah, the only thing you'll need in life is Tanakh and this book, and you can throw everything else out. You don't have to bother reading it. So people didn't really like that. So what? The Shulchan Aruch, which came hundreds of years later? Hundreds of years later. Right? Hundreds. Yeah. So they didn't like it, so many other people gave it its nickname, which is the Yad HaChazakah. Right? Why is it called the Yad HaChazakah? Because it has 14 books. Yod is Dalet. Yod Dalet is 14 books. Yad HaChazakah. That's all. So the beginning of each halakha, right? Yad HaChazakah is very short, right? Very short book, right? You can do it in, you know, I don't know, how many prakim can you do a day? Whatever it is, 982 prakim. Not so long. So, no, not so long. Not so long.
How long
it's not.
How long is each prayer?
It depends. It'll take you a few years. It'll take a few years. Do a parak and do a day. What do you mean? People do Rambam Yomi, it takes, right, less than 3 years. I do the math. Right? I'm saying. I'm not saying you did it in one shot. It wouldn't be long. It would be long. Right? But if you did a parak a day, which is not such a big deal, right? Ginsburg gives like Rambam Yomi, right? If you do like a parak a day, it takes, you know, you take whatever it takes you, 15 minutes, half an hour, right?
What if you do, for a two-month example, what if you
What if you do Hilchot Tshuva over and over again? What?
No, no. I mean, what if you do
Then you'll go through it pretty quickly. Are you ready to do the 10 prakim in Hilchot Tshuva in one day and the 30 prakim in Hilchot Shabbat in one day and 14 prakim in Hilchot Avel in one day? I don't know. I mean, if you are, then great. I mean, I'm happy. Zach, I will personally, from my own money, buy you the cake if you make a siyum on all of Mishneh Torah this year, okay? I'll get you a fancy cake. I will, okay, with all of you as my edim, I am personally willing to pay for the cake, okay? I will personally put my own money down and buy the cake, okay? I'm willing to take out the money in my pocket so it's not an asmachta. Commit to it right now, okay? Right? How many sections are there? I don't know. It's probably, I don't know, some like probably 50 sections. I'm not exactly sure. Never like counted it. I only know it's 982 prakim because the Rambam says it at the end. It's not like I count it, right? He says there are 982 prakim. What? Yes, I was counting. No, I was not doing it. I was not doing that. Okay. No, the Rambam just tells you. Very good. So at the beginning of each halacha, he says a koteret. So what does it say in the koteret, Kobe? Koteret, the Hilchot Shmita V'Yoga. What does he say? Five mitzvot. I helpfully divided for you into five and lined it up like this so you could look at it. Yeah, what are they? What are the five mitzvot in Hilchot Shmita V'Yoga? On Shmita, at least.
You shouldn't do any work on the land during this year. You shouldn't do any work on the trees in this
Shalom Yixor HaSkia, the Zerah HaKosrin, you should cut the, like, the younger, some, it sounds like more like leftover.
Aftergrowth.
Aftergrowth?
Yeah.
You should cut aftergrowth like you normally would.
Later on in the year, you'll run into the problem of Svichen. Svichen are things that grow by themselves, like aftergrowth during Shemitah, which has all types of rabbinic problems with it. It's in that little booklet that you got. But we'll also do this again later in the year. But don't worry about it yet. You're not in Svichen yet. Right now, fruit are not a problem. Vegetables are already a problem. Right. What? Then it's a vegetable. Then for that purpose. What are you making tea out of?
Yeah, biscuit.
You're not asking me like you. It's not like you have these flowers. I was like, oh really?
Yeah.
Oh, then yes. Yes. And then that's a, then that's. I mean, you can. You're allowed to pick it to make it. It's just it'll be cut. There should be it. Yeah.
Can you? Put it
it'll be holy.
Can you let it down in jar for like air time?
Yeah. Whatever's the normal way, as we'll see later on. Kederach ha'ochlan. You can eat it the normal way, and that's the normal way of having hibiscus for sure. Sure. I didn't know you had it. I mean, mint is the normal one that everyone has, you know. Yeah, okay, good. So you've soren the zirim, gederach ha'botzrim, right? Okay, good. Now, well, it's the, these are the grapes. The vines, the not the right word I'm looking for, the, no, it's the young plants, whatever it is. Yes, there you go. Sure. Okay. So if you read the Rambam in the Koteret, what would you say? What does the Rambam believe? Is it a myth on the land, a myth on the people? The first one is on the land. The second, the rest of them are on the person. So you would say that he holds
hybrid,
either like the Ritva, that is both, or like the Minchat Chinuch, dividing between Mitzvah Aseh and Mitzvah Lo Taseh, right? Agreed? You just read the Koteret of the Rambam. Good. Now read Halacha Aleph, Perek Aleph, Josh. Very good. Okay, so you tell me. Shenemar says chalot is Rav Kama, chalot is Mark. Josh, you read Halacha Aleph in the Rambam. What does it sound like? Who's the Yisra on? Well, let's take a vote. Okay, in the Koteret, he definitely said, Shetishbot Ha'aret, the land should rest, and then he divides the person. Halacha Aleph, who thinks the Rambam sounds like the Yisra is on the land? Everyone vote. I want 8 votes. Right? Okay, who thinks that from Halacha Aleph it sounds like the Isser is on the land?
Oh, the Isser, okay.
Or mitzvah or anything?
I think that it's possible.
Okay, Zach thinks so. Okay, good. Who thinks that it's on the person? 2 votes. That's 4, 3 votes. That's 3 out of 8. 4 out of 8. Come on. I said 8. Vote. What do you think the Rama means?
I think that's a positive.
Oh, okay, both. Sorry. Who thinks it's both? 2. I'm still at 6. Ellie and Chaim, you haven't voted. Person, land, both. What do you vote in Halakha Aleph of the Rambam? Land. Both. Okay, fine. Good. So, not surprisingly, no one really knows what the Rambam means because it's very unclear. So what possibilities are there? So, some people say that the Rambam thinks the mitzvah is on the person. I, in the Koteret, he says it's on the land. So what do they say? Love Dafka. Okay, don't worry about it too much. Other people say, no, the Rambam thinks it's on the land. I, halakha, sounds like in the person. Okay, either lav dafka or it's both. Okay, fine. Right? There is another answer. I was talking last week with, on my way back from shul, with one of my neighbors, who if you come, you might meet him. He's given shirim by me in the past. Rabbi Bezalel Daniel. He's a Dayan. But he also writes a smicha curriculum for Balabatim, who want to Moreno from Eretz Chemda, and right this year he's writing the curriculum for Shemitah. So he was talking to me, he's like, aha, what do you do with the Rambam? He said, some of the Acharonim say, right, that the Koteret tells you the purpose of the mitzvah, and the halacha tell you the practical derech hamitzvah. And therefore, he said, it could be that, what does the Rambam think? That the nature of the mitzvah that's on the person. But, remember we said, you have to ask, what is the connection between the philosophy of the mitzvah and the actual steward mitzvah? So he said, some of the Acharim think that the koteret gives you the purpose, and the halakha gives you the structure. So the actual structure of the mitzvah is that it's on the person, right? That's why he says, lishbot, right, that you should not work. But what's the purpose of you not working? So the land will rest. So the surat ha-mitzvah, the structure of the mitzvah is on the gavra, to use the lamdish term, right? But the purpose, the tachlit ha-mitzvah, the tachlis ha-mitzvah, right, the purpose to which it aims is on the land, right? So that's another defense in the Achronim. I gave him a twist on it, which I think is a little bit more precise, right? I'm partial to that type of explanation. I don't know if that's what the Rambam means here, but I do think the Rambam sometimes does that. But I gave him another formulation from Rabbi Rabinovich. Nachum Rabinovich, who passed away last year, who was the senior rabbi in the religious Zionist community. He died at 90-something, mid-90s, whatever. Very storied career, right? He's, bounced around a bunch of communities before he came to Israel, right? Spent a bunch of time as the rabbi of Clanton Park. Right? To the Torontonians just missed that. But he was the rabbi of Clanton Park for a while. Right? The people still remember when he was, that was when he was in Toronto, that was when he did his PhD. If someone wants to borrow it some year, at some point, you can borrow it from me. It's on, it's a PhD in applied mathematics and of probability theory in the Talmud. It's very dense. I have tried reading it. I did not get very far. Extremely dense. But he argues that one of the things you always need to remember in the Rambam is that the Rambam gives you a key rule in Shoresh 5. So the Rambam writes the Sefer HaMitzvot, right? And in the introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvot, he writes the Shoreshim. What are the Shoreshim? The principles he used to figure out what should count as a mitzvah and what shouldn't. And the fifth principle is that you don't count the purpose of the mitzvah. Right? The purpose of the mitzvah is important, but it doesn't count as the mitzvah itself. It's the purpose to which the mitzvah aims, but it's not itself an independent mitzvah. Right? And therefore, he argues that explains a lot of problems in the Rambam. So, for example, the Rambam does not, give me a second to get the thought out, right? The Rambam does not count the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah. And everyone wants to figure out, why doesn't he count living in Israel as a mitzvah? He quotes all the Gemaras that it's really important, that living outside of Eretz Yisrael is like worshiping Avodah Zarah, right? That it's better to live in Eretz Yisrael amongst, right, amongst Ame Aretz and to make amongst Tamei Bicham in Eretz, right, in Chutz Laretz, etc., etc. So Rabinovich argues, well, many of the other mitzvot of the Torah, their purpose is Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, the Rambam didn't think you could count Yishuv Eretz Yisrael as a mitzvah because it is the purpose of other mitzvahs. And therefore, it's not itself counted as a mitzvah because it is the tachlit of other mitzvot. Therefore, it is not a mitzvah itself. It's possible that that's the relationship between the koteret and the halacha, right? That sometimes the Rambam will tell you the purpose, but the purpose can't be counted quite as a mitzvah, right? Because it's the purpose of a series of mitzvot. So all the mitzvot of Shemitah, all the chiyuve gavra, right, these five mitzvot on the person, right, don't work the land, don't plow, don't prune, all that, their goal cumulatively is to make sure the land rests. But therefore, the several mitzvot which are on the person are the ma'aseh ha-mitzvah, right, they are the act of the mitzvah itself, but they all aim at the purpose of shvitat ha'aretz. So that's another potential defense of or explanation of the seeming split between the koteret and the halacha. Yeah. So Josh, then Morcha, yeah. He should not work, yeah. It's not shelo yavod, right? Yeah. Right, it's exactly, right? No, it's shelo yavod seems that he shouldn't work.
Also, is the first class of the Rambam talking about the first that you mentioned, or talking about all five that you mentioned?
No, he goes on. I just didn't give you all the Rambam.
No, I'm saying in this part that we have right here, he's talking
about it's not all five. No, he continues to explain.
The first
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he continues to explain them because they're separate psukim, right?
So
they each get different psukim.
Okay.
Right? So you're talking about, right, avodat, haras and ilanot, right? Sira and betira are separate.
Okay.
Yeah. Right, those are the next time, later on in the halacha. Yeah, Mordechai.
All right, so I don't think that it being a means to an end necessarily invalidates it from being a mitzvah itself. There was,
I mean, the Rambam thinks it does.
Okay.
You're right, other people might disagree. The Rambam himself right. says that it does.
I mean, there was an opinion that the purpose of Shmita is so that you sit back and you learn a bit more. So that's mitzvah. Shemitah was a means to that end, but nobody would say that Shemitah is mitzvah.
Oh, correct. Meaning you can have cases like that, but the Rambam himself thinks the purpose, right, doesn't get counted as a separate mitzvah. I mean, there the mitzvah might be Talmud Torah, but it's not, right, you wouldn't say the mitzvah of Shemitah is to learn Torah during Shemitah. No one would say that, right? You could say, right, you divide between the purpose and the reason, right, even if you took that. But again, this is the Rambam's localized approach. Okay, so that's, again, there are other ways of reading the Rambam, but those are, b'kitzur, some of them. Okay.
So this what does that include?
We're going to see that this year. We're going to see that.
What is the Rambam?
Well, we're going to see that. I can't summarize that for you now. I understand. We can't do that now. No, this is complicated. Right? I mean, we're going to do that this year. What do you think we're going to do this year? Right, it's not like, oh, we're done, right? Yes, we have now done two questions in Shemitah. Now, right, throw out your Yerushalmis and all the sukkahs in the Bavli, and we've now understood everything, right? There's a lot to understand in Shemitah. We'll do it, okay? If I don't, remind me at some point. Okay. Fine. In the time we have left, let's think about some other implications of this. So, before we look at inside in the Acharonim, if we don't get to look at the Acharonim inside, it's fine. What other nafgamina might there be, right? So we talked about Jews, we talked about giving it to Jews, we talked about giving it to non-Jews. What other nafgamina might you expect?
What about aliens?
What, do you think there aren't aliens? Don't you know aliens are discussed in the Rishonim?
Well,
so we will get back to that to give us its knuckles. You are correct that one of the major questions in terms of defining the land is that question of moving it in a pot. Very good.
Wouldn't that be against the rule?
That's not, that's subject to a different question, which is it's considered the land. You are right that the Yerushalmi has a suffix which seems to be dependent exactly what you said, but that's much more complicated than I wanted to do today. You are correct. It is a suffix in the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi Zaman is a very long discussion in Mabe Ne'aretz about it. Very good. Very good. Don't worry about it. Yes, there is a big suffix in terms of defining the land of Atzis Nakov, Atzis Sheino Nakov, not of Atzis Nakov. Everyone agrees that a pot with a hole is considered part of the land, but in Atzis Sheino Nakov, correct, there's a suffix, which the Yerushalmi proposes on this, as well as in a house. Right? What about in a house? Right? But that really comes down to the question of how do you define land? Right? Because everyone, right, either the land has to rest or you can't work the land. But it's a different question. Is working in your house, does that count? Right? And then what happens if you combine it? What if you do it in a, right, in a pot with no hole in a house? Right? So you combine two svekos, or what we call a greenhouse, right? Hydroponic greenhouse, or in Hebrew, a masam inutak, which last year, just to teach the kids what it was, they had the, in Efrat, the younger grades have once a week, they go to this thing called Chavach HaKlait, where they go to a farm and, like, learn hands-on agriculture. So in honor of Shemitah, they built a Masa Menutak, right? They put down the plastic underneath to separate it from the ground inside of a greenhouse because we're Mekel, right? We're Mekel on double suffix. If it's a Masa Menutak inside of a greenhouse, so then it's Petel Chabayit and it's not attached to the ground. Oh, we combine Jews, make it, and we're Mekel. That's the decision for Shul Zalman.
How does Jews be attached to the ground?
Get your floors. Yes. Thank you, Kobe. They had dirt floors. That's why the Gemara says it's also to sweep your floors on Shabbos. It's also Midoraisa, right? Because you have dirt floors, and therefore you're going to smooth that hole. Yes.
So is that irrelevant nowadays?
You would think, but not clearly, actually.
Why?
They do, but you'd be surprised that it's not, I mean, it's mutter, but it's not clear why it's mutter. It's actually a discussion in postgame, a big discussion in postgame, because it might be a formal zero.
I would. Theoretically, if you're a room, but the
I always thought that was a great chumrah. Be like, you know, your parents want you to clean up after the meal. No! I'm machmir. It's a formal gzera. You can't sweep on Shabbos. Of course, then they could just say, fine, get on your hands and knees and pick up every crumb, because that's not a gzera. Everyone agrees that's not a gzera d'rabbanan, and then you're stuck. So, you know, be careful who you pull that chumrah on. Well, that was similar to what we just saw, but okay, but let's spread it out. But yeah, so let's talk about other potential nafkim, you know? So obviously they're all going to be related, but one of them that all the modern achronim get into, and I mentioned it briefly, was not just if you have workers in your field, we've already talked about that, but what happens if, against your will, workers are working your field? In what case are workers working your field against your will? So they say, probably not your backyard, but what about city property that's communally owned? Right? I mentioned this, right? So what do you do? Right? What do? Right? You live in Modi'in. Who says they're keeping Shemitah? I have no idea if they're keeping Shemitah on all the, right?
If you don't mind the idea that it's just about working where your fields are, there's no problem.
So good. If it's about work, if it's about you working, so you'd say, what do you mean? It's not my problem. I didn't work. I didn't tell them to work. Right, I happen to own part of it because I live in this city and I'm a taxpayer, and fine. Obviously, I have no responsibility. But what if you think you have an obligation to make sure the land rests? So then potentially what?
Yeah.
Any land where I have any sort of hold, I have to make sure that it rests. So then the Achronim actually bring this up, and then they say, okay, then what can you do? What? The Moshe is getting all violent here. He's like, aha! I am not going to learn shir this year. I am going to go and stand by every tree and in all of Modi'in. If I see someone working it, right, I'm going to protest, right? Shabbat Haaretz! Shabbaton! What are you doing? Don't do it! Right? It's going to be great. This is going to be great for recruiting pictures, right? Right? He came within 2 weeks. He was convinced that instead of sitting in chair, he should go around Modi'in. Yeah, exactly. Literally, yes. Chain myself to the tree. Don't cut it. Don't cut it. Don't prune it. Don't do it.
There is actually a great video that my mom showed me a bunch of years back about a bunch of people just like surrounding a tree. And then there's one person that goes up to the tree and starts crying about how trees get cut down. She has like a primal scream.
Yeah.
It brings you to the problem.
So what?
That was number four.
We'll get to it. Okay. So the Achronim ask about this, and the way they frame it is a little bit less, you know, in your face than Moshe, that I ascribe to Moshe, whether or not that's what Moshe meant. Okay, fine. Are you obligated to be maskeret? Right? There's an easier way, which is that everybody here gets in front of a bezdin of three and says, I hereby relinquish my rights in the communal property.
How do you get those back?
What? So then they get into the question, is that considered forever? Right? Is that type of relinquishing forever? Or is this just a symbolic relinquishing for the purpose of Shemitah to say that I'm not okay with this? Very good. So that is a discussion. In those same Achronim, they argue that based on Shulchan Aruch and some Reish Mem-Vav, you are allowed to do a temporary hefker for this purpose. Very good, Kobe. But yes, the Achronim suggest that even if you were obligated to do it, it would be a temporary hefker, and therefore everyone would be obligated to, right, at the end of Shir, we'll all get together, we all hereby mafkir for the next year our rights into all communally owned property in Modi'in, which are not going to follow the laws of Shemitah.
That's
boom.
Who typically pay taxes in Modi'in of, like, government? Like,
potentially, yes. Now, obviously, much more direct would be chater shutafut, right, if you actually co-own something with somebody, right? But they potentially raise it as well in this context. Okay?
What do you mean about rights, though? Are you saying
ownership? Yeah. Ownership, well, whatever, to whatever extent. Right, I mean, the classic case is more like chata shutfe, right, whereas you co-own a property, right? But some are even willing, right, some of the modern achronim are even willing to ask, well, what if it's not, I directly own it, co-own it, but like, you know, I live in the city and I pay taxes and whatever, right? They're willing to go that far.
Does that mean you can't visit, like, parks?
ownership on them.
Yeah.
What?
If you're like relinquishing ownership on the park.
Not necessarily, right? Well, that might be a problem, right? I'm not saying, I don't know whether the parks are being worked during Shemitah. I have no idea, right? They're allowed to be watered to keep things alive, so that's not Be'isr. So I don't know, you know. Right? Now, some, the Oral Lision actually suggests, based on this, that if you are, let's say, in charge of the Vat HaBayit, right? You're the, what is it, the co-op board, right? You, like, live in a co-op or something, and you're head of the co-op board, and the co-op is actually going to be working it, then you have to quit. Right, you can't be the head of the co-op board because then, yeah, you are responsible for those for what's happening. Okay, you're on the board. I don't know, right? Or you're, I don't know, is there a constitution? I don't know. Fine. Yeah, so the Chutshani, Rav Nissim Karelitz, is the one who brings up the context in communal cities, right? Where he deals with this problem of maybe even you should, okay. Another interesting naftamina is on the positive side. What's on the positive side? So one of the things that some of the Achronim suggest is there a value to someone who doesn't own land in Eretz Yisrael going out of their way to buy land in Eretz Yisrael so that they have their land resting? Right? Well, he said, well, if the... if the nature of the mitzvah is just a lokas, they don't work the land, right, on the gavra, so then... There's no mitzvah, so you, right? I mean, you're gonna, right? Now you're not working land. Then you're not working land. Nothing has changed. But if there's a mitzvah in the toksah to bring about a result, so then potentially what?
You got a mitzvah.
Right? If I own land, then I get the passive mitzvah, having achieved the goal of having the land rest. Which, if I don't own the land, that's not on me. Right?
The rabbi in my school.
What? Well, not really, because nothing has changed. I didn't work land before. I didn't work land now.
Yeah, you're not working land either way.
Correct. Correct. But if it's about, but if there's a positive mitzvah to have the land rest, that even, right, then by having buying land and having it rest, I've now achieved a certain goal, right? And something has changed, because before, I wasn't part of that goal, and now I am.
But why does it mean that, just because there's a change, you want your mitzvah?
Well, because it's right, there's nothing, right, because if it's just on you, so you were passive either way, but if it's about bringing about a result, then I can be Mekayim and Mitzvah passively, right?
I understand that. But
correct, because otherwise, if it's just don't do this, so as long as you're not doing it, nothing has changed.
Yeah.
But if you're obligated to bring about a certain result, so if I some way am connected to that result, so I might get a Mitzvah.
Okay, so
you could quibble with this.
Why couldn't you get a Mitzvah even though that nothing has changed?
So you could quibble, right? You could quibble and say, well, what do you mean? I wasn't working land. I could have gone and worked someone else's land during Shemitah, and I didn't do that, so I get a mitzvah. You're right, right? You could quibble. In general, though, we don't assume that you get, like, a mitzvah for not violating an isra that you weren't even connected to at all. Because, right now while you're in yeshiva, you're not committing adultery. I mean, great. Who would? Right? That's not a realistic option. What?
Okay, well, why don't you
give
an example of the positive
plan? If you don't own land, the fact that it's resting is not on you, right? And if they're, right?
Right.
Right, and therefore, but if you own it, right, now it is on you, and you've brought about the result.
No, I understand that. I'm just talking about, like, if you do it for the first year, I don't know why, like...
Because then you're focusing on the low top stage, right? It's constantly what you're working, what you're not, right? And you weren't working in it one way or the other. Right? But if, again, you could quibble with it. I'm not saying you can't quibble with it. Right? I'm not saying you can't quibble with it. But this is a suggestion that's brought up by some of the Achronim. Okay?
According to the Shammai, would it be a good idea to buy the land if you can't trust the person you currently own if you
can't get on it? I mean, possibly. If you wanted to go out of your way and say, no, I want to bring less rest of the land, I'm going to go out of my... Right? It could be. Okay. Let's see. It's already 11:05. So let me run through what I gave you here in the Chazon Ish. So the Chazon Ish, if you remember, had noted, right, this machloket, the possible difference between Tosfos and Tosfos Rabbeinu Elchanan, right? We said that outside. Fine. So one of the more important ones is this Maharit. So in Yud. The Maharit says, can I rent out my field to a non-Jew, behavla. So what's havla? So the general rule is like this. On Shabbos, are you allowed to hire a non-Jew to work for you?
No.
No. Right? Are you allowed to hire a Jew to work for you?
No.
No. Let's say you are a waiter, right, in a catering company, right? You're making some money on the side, right? And you are the waiter for the shul kiddush. So how do they pay you? Havla'ah. What's havla'ah? Havla'ah literally means to swallow up. So what's the way? Right? You have to come and clean, set up on Friday or clean up on Motei Shabbos, then we pay you all together, and that's fine. It's called havla'ah. Halachically, that I didn't pay you for
Shabbos.
So Maariv says, can I hire a non-Jew to work for me and just solve the problem? Behavla'ah.
Okay. How is it instead of a
because I paid all together.
So
correct. Doesn't matter. That's okay.
You mean have a non-Jew work slightly before Shemitah so that they can work on Shemitah?
Not slightly. But I hire you for the next 5 years to work in my field.
Yeah.
One of those years is Shemitah. Is that enough to solve the problem? You tell me.
I mean, I guess if you view it like,
so the Maharit says you can do it.
Yeah.
Right? What is Maharit clearly holding?
The
issue is on the person, right? And therefore, the only problem with having a non-Jew is like Amir Lenachri, but if I can solve it without law, fine. The Nitziv says, no, why not? Shvita Tzadehu. It's like your moods are on the field, right? So this is just a twist on the non-Jew question, which is, can you just solve it by swallowing it up into other things? So it's clear that Maharit thinks that the Isser is only on the person, whereas the Nitziv responds by saying, no, it's at least also on the land. Okay. Let me see if there's anything else that I want you to understand, to at least understand the basic issues. Yes. Okay, this is one more, which is the third case of the Minchas Chinuch. One more case of Minchas Chinuch. This is a little bit complicated, which goes like this. There's a Isser of Tosefet Shviat, which we'll come back to after Yom Tov. But he says, leaving aside Tosefet Shviat and the obligation to add to Shemitah, what if I plant a tree the day before Shemitah so that it only takes root during Shemitah? So, in effect, I planted during Shemitah, but I actually did the act before Shemitah. Was that clear?
Yeah.
Right? Was it clear? It's confusing.
You didn't plant
it. Right? I planted the day before Shemitah, yeah, but I set in motion something. It only took root during Shemitah. So the effect was that my act actually led to planting during Shemitah.
It's like turning on the lost machine before Shabbat starts that way.
Yeah, something like that. Exactly.
So
the Minchas Chinuch says, if the nature of the Isser is to work the field, so during Shemitah I wasn't actually working. But if the Chiyuv is to make sure the land rests, if I set something in motion that made it that what? The land didn't rest because something got planted, effectively got planted anew during Shemitah, then I violated at least the Asay. And that is the position of the Minchas Chinuch that Hashrasha, that causing something to take root during Shemitah by planting it right before Shemitah, even without the issue of Tosefet Shviat, is Aser Mideoraita. That is the position of the Minchas Chinuch, or at least it's Mistupak. But that, the Chazon Ish, Rav Shlomo Zalman is noted as to be Machmir LaHalacha, that you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't plant right before. The Chazon Ish is noted LaHakel. Right? The Chazon Ish is willing to be Mekel. A similar one that's brought up by Rashid Beza Frank is, what if I perform a malacha al yidei grama? Right, what's this? So I don't do something, I cause during Shemitah malacha to happen in the field indirectly. So on Shabbat, if you make a malacha happen indirectly, do you violate the Isra malacha? No. It's called grama, right? So you can travel to that, right? So what happens if I cause the land to be worked al yidei grama? So again, exactly, right? So another potential nafkamina as well. As we know, grama isn't considered an action, and therefore if the prohibition is for you to act, indirect action halacha is not considered an act. But if there's a mitzvah to ensure the result of the land resting, so then even doing something indirectly should be a biblical violation of Shemitah. So that is another nafkamina that the Achronim bring up. That one is primarily bought from Rav Yehuda Frank, who is noteh l'akel. He's noteh l'akel, and to say that maybe even it's more makel than a non-Jew for an analysis that he has there. Okay, those are some of the nafkaminas brought up, but again, what we've seen is, to summarize, we've seen those people who say the Isser is on the person, those who say it's on the land, those who say it's both, some Mitzvah who divides it in the Aseh, which is on the land, the Lotus say which is on the person, the Rambam, we went through the unclarity, where the Rambam, the Koteret, seems to say it's on the land, in the Halacha seems to say it's on the person, so either he's Lav Dafka on the Koteret, Lav Dafka on the Halacha, or the purpose of the Mitzvah is that the land should rest, the Surah of the Mitzvah is the act, Nafkaminas that we saw, when you give it to somebody else to work, do you violate only Lifnei Iver or do you violate Shemitah? Do I violate it all if I give it to a non-Jew? Am I obligated to ensure that my co-owned property or maybe even government-owned property, which I have certain rights to, is not worked? And do I have to be mafkir it to relinquish my rights in that? Is there a potential value to specifically owning land so that I have land which is resting? Is there a problem with causing indirect work on the land or not? And the last one we did was, right, if I plant before Shemitah for it to take root during Shemitah, is that a violation of Shemitah or not? So on the one hand, I didn't work during Shemitah. On the other hand, I caused the land to do work during Shemitah. Those are at least some of the Achronim, nafkaminas that are brought up by the Achronim. Like I said, this fundamental question, the extent to which the Isser is on the land and the extent to which it's on the person, will come up several times during the year, so I just wanted to sort of get our feet wet. And as I mentioned, one of the things that I like about this topic is that, as you see, it forces you not just to sort of ask basic questions about Shemitah, but to ask about the potential connection between the philosophy behind the mitzvah and how it might manifest itself in the actual Surat HaMitzvah, in the actual implementation of the law. Okay? So as I said, when it comes to Hashrasha, right, which is one potential nafkamina. Rav Shlomo Zalman is noted, right, to be machmir. The Chazon Ish is noted to be mekel. In terms of the communal land problem, or let's say in terms of the grama, Rav Yitzchak Frank himself is noted to be mekel. Most posthumous in the women are chayavot. In terms of the co-owned property or the government property, I'll read you from different Achronim, one second. So again, you have a machloket, right? The Mishpate Aret of Reichenberg writes that it is forbidden to be to participate in communally owned property that's going to work, and you actually have to declare, I'm not involved with this. Right? Not everyone agrees with this. Let's see. Yeah, again, it's machloket. Different ones as we'll see through the year. We're going to come back to some of these issues. It's machloket. Most of the, right, this is a live machloket in the postgame. Right, this is not like settled. Right, that some postgame are very much on one side, some on the other. Okay? Good. Shkoyach, guys. Good luck with your Lulav and Esrog. What?
Right, that's
what? Another half an hour? Now you tell me.